Policy, February 27th, 2007, to order. And welcome everybody this afternoon. Nice to see everybody here. We have distinguished guests in the audience today. We're going to open with, on our agenda, we're going to open a work session with House Bill 2080. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2080 be amended with the Dash 4 amendment.
Representative Boone moves that the Dash 4 amendment. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2080 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Amended recommendation.
Representative Boone moves House Bill 2080 to the House floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, would you please call the roll?
Senator George L.
Aye.
Senator Johnson, Representative Creeder.
Aye.
Senator Johnson is excused.
Senator Morissette, Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Representative George Gary.
Aye.
Representative Nelson. Chair Byrne.
Aye.
Chair Berger.
Aye. House Bill 2080 passes to the floor. We need a carrier. Do I have a volunteer?
I'll do it.
Volunteer? All right.
I'd like to. Sure.
Good. All right. Next on the agenda, I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 570. All right. I'll call Kathy Peterson and Randy Covey. Welcome, and if you'll please identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Berger and Chair Boone and committee members. My name is Kelly Peterson, and I'm with the Humane Society of the United States. And it's honestly my true pleasure to be here supporting this bill, Senate Bill 570. And I just wanted just to take a moment, because I'm actually going to introduce the person next to me, just to thank the committee's the sponsors of this bill that are on the committee, and that's Senator Verger and Representative Boone and Representative Cowan, and most recently Senator Gary George. During Hurricane Katrina, myself, just watching the images on TV, Oregonians, including quite a few people in the audience here today, were really moved and responded by flying into Louisiana to help with some of the rescue efforts and helping reuniting pet owners with their pets. And so to that end, in December just of this year, or of last year, we started working with the Oregon Office of Emergency Management and the Oregon Department of Agriculture and local humane societies and local animal control agencies and legislators to craft some sort of bill that would consider pets, service animals, and livestock in times of disaster or emergency. And that's the language before you today. And at this time, I just want to turn it over to Randy Covey, who's our Director of Disaster Services for the Humane Society of the U.S. And he was formerly with the Oregon Humane Society, and he founded the Oregon Humane Society's Technical Animal Response. And so he also was in Louisiana for about 3 weeks. So thank you again.
Thank you, Kelly. Madam Chair Berger and Madam Chair Boone, my name is Randy Covey. I'm the Director of Disaster Services for the Humane Society of the United States, which is a national nonprofit organization. My department focuses on national preparedness issues for topics for this particular topic, which is dealing with animals and disaster. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon in support of Senate Bill 570, and I want to thank the sponsors and the co-sponsors of this bill for sponsoring it. With this bill, Oregon is taking critical steps towards protecting its citizens by addressing the animal issues that arise in disasters. And I can't stress that enough. The question often arises, why don't we, if we have a limited amount of resources, why don't we put that towards people and not animals? Well, I want to make the point that by addressing the animal issues that are important to people, you are actually addressing the needs of your citizens here in the state of Oregon. As a field responder to many disasters over 20 years in law enforcement and animal welfare, I've seen firsthand the importance of including provisions for animals in emergency plans. Oregon wildfires, flooding issues, as well as hurricanes, the most severe, of course, we've seen is Katrina, but disasters are not limited to that, and certainly we have disasters here in the state of Oregon. This legislation before you today is supported by the Office of Emergency Management, and it grants them the authority and also the flexibility to create plans that will enhance the level of preparedness in Oregon. This is an important first step towards meeting the requirements of the Federal Pets Act, which, as you likely know, includes a provision that requires that animal issues be included in disaster planning and ties that directly to funding. But it also will allow Oregon to pursue federal funding for preparedness as well as reimbursement for response and recovery efforts. Nationally, over the past year, I've seen the Office of Homeland Security provide grants from as little as $200,000 to as much as $1.5 million to states that are providing, including animal issues in their planning process. And so that funding is available and has already, a precedent has been set for that. Now, Oregon enjoys the dedication and resources of local private nonprofits like the Oregon Humane Society, represented here today, and also the Redmond Humane Society, represented here today. And those, as you know, in disaster response, all disasters are locally owned, and so you have some great resources already here in the state of Oregon that will help create the plans and pursue the goals included in this legislation. This bill is a win for both the agricultural community and the companion animal owners in the state of Oregon. Kelly Peterson has provided for you some information that will help you understand the issues. Also, there's a flyer that you have before you that already helps meet the information, and that will already help meet some of the goals of this legislation in terms of education, disaster preparedness. So I would submit to you that the issues in this bill are not as difficult as they may seem. In fact, a lot of this work has already been done. And speaking from the national level, there are agencies and resources available to help Oregon meet the provisions of this and provide assistance to Oregon Emergency Management as they craft these plans. I don't want to take up a lot more of your time. I will certainly be happy to answer any questions either now or after further testimony, but I would like to request that you move this bill out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative
Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I did sign on as a sponsor to this bill, and as anyone who knows me very well would tell you, there's probably nobody who cares any more about her animals than I. But I have some concerns, too, that I'd like you to elaborate on a bit, if you would, please. I'm also pretty well grounded in the challenges of an emergency operation. And as I went through the bill on page 2, I highlighted a few places on lines 2 and 3 that owners and animals be evacuated together whenever possible. And again, down in Section 4, lines 22 and 23, that rescue operations make every practical attempt. I think those are very important pieces to highlight, that at no time in a rescue operation would I ever suggest that the animal in question, you know, should be put in front of the practical matters of emergency personnel trying to do what they can to rescue and save human life. So as we go up to item E on that page, lines 7 through 9, it talks about transporting companion animals or service animals in cages or carriers. And I think specifically what I'd like you to address is, as this planning takes place, is there some provision from the Humane Society or somewhere that might make available carriers or see to it that emergency responders have carriers available? Because it's difficult to handle someone else's animal, and I wouldn't ever want to put them in jeopardy. Frankly, I have no idea how my three dogs would respond if somebody else tried to take them away. So I'd appreciate it if you could address a little bit the practical aspects of how you would envision this planning to take place with an emergency operation.
Sure, Representative Callan, Madam Chairs. It is a good question, and I appreciate you your attention to detail in the bill and pointing that out. As a matter of fact, when you mentioned the issue of making sure that animal issues don't take precedent over human issues and don't interfere with emergency responders that are trying to do their job, what we found is actually that by including animal issues in the planning process, you can help address these issues in advance. What we have seen in the past is that when there are no plans in place and responders go in and they're trying to rescue people and the people won't leave their homes because the animals are there and they won't evacuate without them, the responders are at a loss because they don't have the resources available or the training or even the information. And that is what I think has brought us, it's one of the major issues that has brought us here today. In response to your question about provisions for that, where that starts is with the preparedness part and the education part, where you provide education. The flyer that you have, I think, specifically addresses that issue with people that own animals and putting a responsibility on them to have carriers and to be prepared to have their animals in the carriers before the rescuers come to take them. So that's the first step, is education and getting people thinking in that direction. In terms of resources, the people that are trained, like the staff that I have nationally, and the Oregon Humane Society's technical rescue team, also respond with those types of carriers. So in a specific rescue scenario, you might have the people going in to rescue the human rescuers, and they encounter people with animals who don't have their own carriers. If you have a plan in place, they might have the ability to say, well, we're going to leave your dog or your cat here, but we have responders that deal specifically with animal rescue, and we will send them in to get your animals after the fact. So you have a good answer for the people. Okay. They come willingly then, knowing that there is a plan in place to help address their animals. But again, the best first defense to that issue is personal preparedness and education.
Quickly, I think, too, it talks a lot about shelters accommodating people with their pets, and I'm not sure I'm totally comfortable with the practicality of that, and I certainly have heard from folks on a local basis, what are we supposed to do? So I think encouraging folks in your line of work to help with providing places where pets could be taken rather than in shelters is probably a lot more manageable in our communities.
Representative Callan and Madam Chairs, I can give you an example nationally where some ways that has been addressed. There are some jurisdictions that have purchased trailers that have emergency animal sheltering supplies in them that they would, that they have available to transport to set up an animal shelter, not in a human shelter, but nearby. And certainly that's the best plan that we advocate from an animal welfare standpoint, is that you have what we call co-location shelters. And that you, as part of your planning, you incorporate those issues in there so that you have a place and you have some resources available. Again, by working with the Office of Emergency Management and creating these plans, and in working with the resources that you have here in the state, as well as the national resources that could be called in if in fact the local resources are overwhelmed, those types of issues are addressed and exactly in the manner that you described.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Boone?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank Kelly and Randy for bringing this to us. Kelly's worked very, very hard on this issue, and there was a large work group that went over many, many issues, and she just tirelessly went through all this and made sure everybody's concerns were addressed. And with her experience and all her information from Katrina experience, the lessons learned that we hope to avoid, you know, if something like this happens. And one of our big issues is also and I'm not saying it's easy to evacuate pets, but it's probably easier to evacuate smaller pets than it is for livestock. So we have a lot of livestock in some of the coastal areas, many of which I represent. And it's not, you can take a dog or a cat, and you can't just pick up a cow or a horse. You can ride the horse. But when there are a lot of animals to move, it's going to be a challenge. And we have a state vet here, too. I hope he's going to testify. And but I wanted to point out Kim Upham, who's a friend of mine and used to work here in the building, went down to Louisiana, and she created and produced a movie called Darkwater Rising, Survival Stories of Hurricane Katrina Animal Rescue. And I watched it, and it was a three-hanky movie, I'll tell you. It was very sad, and it made me angry to see what some of the things that happened. And it just, more than anything, cemented my resolve to helping to find a solution to this, because it's not going to be easy, but at least we'll have something. And I just appreciate everybody's support, and especially all the work that you two have done to bring this to us and for our state. We are joining 10 states who already have this coverage, and it looks like 6 are pending this session, well, this year. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Covey and Ms. Peterson, thank you for being here today, and thanks for all you do. I come from a city that had the first non-kill shelter in the state, and we've placed some 19,000 animals in this period of time from 74 to the state. It used to be called the Evergreen Dove Humane Society, and now it's Homeward Bound Pets. So we've also appreciate the support. In this bill, of the very last section, talks about how we can get funds from the Federal Pets Evacuation and Transportation Standards. And since I realized that in Katrina there was such a delay and so many problems, how much money would they, how do they go about determining how much money you get to take care of animals? I mean, have we got to get a census right now and find out that, like tires, there's one animal to every, one pet to every family, so 3.5 million pets in the state of Oregon that are going to need to be moved if it's a major, I mean, moved somewhere.
Representative Nelson, Madam Chair. If I knew the good answer to that, I think I'd be a very popular person, because that's the question of the day: how much money is available, and how do you determine how to get it and how much to get. What I can tell you is that what we've seen nationally is that states and local entities that have a plan or are working on a plan certainly have a leg up in getting funding. If by passing this legislation, certainly will enhance the chances of getting funding, because you have taken a positive step forward, and I I can testify with confidence that the Office of Homeland Security looks more favorably on that than on states that simply say we want money to get started. You are getting started with this legislation, and I certainly compliment and commend you for that. As far as the amount, I can only tell you that that there have been significant amounts provided. I can also tell you that the wording in the PETS Act, as I understand it, and as the common understanding of the PETS Act, allows for the use of money from the Office of Homeland Security. It doesn't necessarily specify an amount, and it doesn't specify that there's a certain amount of funding for PETS and a certain amount of funding for other disaster response issues. It simply says, and the way we interpret it, simply says that the money is available, and the way we interpret that is that you have the flexibility to determine how much of the money that you get is applied towards PET issues and how much is applied to other disaster response issues. So by merging the two, you actually can use the same money to address human and animal issues at the same time.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I support this. I support the idea, especially of people being prepared to take care of their own when they need to. And we all saw that little poodle on TV standing outside that bus. Now, God knows what happened, poor animal.
Snowball.
Pardon me?
Snowball.
Yeah, and I would have just let it on if I'd been the bus driver. But that ain't what happened. But Representative Cowan, I thought, touched on something important here and how a larger dog, a rat or a Doberman, would react. And I can actually see a scenario where the rescues literally have to euthanize the animal right there on the spot in order just to get access to someone who needs rescuing. I can see that potentially happening. Because our number one goal here is humans. In any of this or any other state models, and once again, I support this idea. I'm not opposing it, but I have to ask this question. Are there any examples where the government agency was held liable for such a scenario? Does this leave us liable or on the hook in any way, shape, or form? And I hope I know the answer to this question, but I have to ask it. Thank you.
Representative Schaffler, Madam Chairs. Liability is a question, of course, that comes up often, and I'm going to give you my response, and that is by not having a plan, I think you create more liability than by having a plan. This bill spells out the fact that human life certainly should be placed first and foremost above animal life and when it comes down to that. But by having a plan in place, and this bill does allow the flexibility and some of the resources that are available to the Office of Emergency Management in developing these plans are other efforts that have gone into just these types of questions. In Louisiana, for example, as I'm sure you can imagine, they're taking the lead in creating some very detailed and comprehensive disaster response plans for animal issues. And we're actually working with them to develop plans where animal trained professional animal responders will go in with first responders and will then be on scene or nearby when just that scenario comes up. Is a Rottweiler protecting its property? So you can call the animal experts in to deal with that. They're trained in first response, emergency response, and again, that's part of the planning process, is having those resources available so that when those scenarios come up, you can address them appropriately.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator George.
Madam Chair, you know me. I don't want to form another bureaucracy. And when I'm taking Charlie on the back of my four-wheeler and we're headed down the road on that ATV, I don't want anybody talking about that he isn't in a cage. Because he rides with me all the time, and he doesn't wear a helmet, by the way. And he's not going to wear a helmet. So we're going to do what we need to do. But one of the things I think is important today, we have a possible work session on this. We have a TV camera in the room. Capital Press is probably monitoring this hearing. We have 4-H and FFA kids all over the country. Every farmer I know loves the plan, and let's get going with it. Let's pass this bill, and let's put this plan in place. I mean, we have enough stuff right here to write 200 articles. I mean, I could see the 4-H and FFA kids debating, are your animals prepared? And I could see them at the state fair having events talking about, you know, how we prepare our animals in case of an emergency. Let's get this thing done.
Thank you, Senator George. All right, thank you very much. We have a couple of people that have come from more than 100 miles, so I'm going to call them up. Susan Bentley and Jamie Kansky. Welcome to both of you. Thank you for traveling.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Susan Bentley, and I am with the Oregon Humane Society. I serve as the operations director. And I'm sure you already know this, but I just want to explain that the Oregon Humane Society is based in Portland. It's its own organization. We don't really represent other shelters in the state of Oregon. We work closely with all of the shelters. We also work closely with the Humane Society of the United States, which was just represented here by Kelly Peterson and Randy Covey. They're an umbrella organization. They do tremendous things for all of the states, and we're just thrilled that they're here today to help support Senate Bill 570. Since Hurricane Katrina, Oregon Humane Society has already been working with state entities such as the Department of Agriculture, the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, and local municipalities to begin the discussion of what it would look like if something, and of course we don't know what, were to hit either Portland locally or the state on a mass crisis issue. Planning's hard when you don't know what you're looking at, but we can only imagine that there could be an earthquake in our future or some other kind of catastrophic event, even a power failure, which, you know, a cumulative couple of days can really add to a discomfort. So rather than trying to decide what might happen, we're trying to be proactive and come up with some plans. Hurricane Katrina taught us what not to do. It was a real teachable moment, both for the human population and both for the animals. And it really wasn't anyone's fault. Curiously, there were lots of resources. There was a lot of money there, a lot of money to help, and volunteers just came from all over the country to assist with the animals in the crisis. Money and labor really didn't save the day because there was a lack of planning. There's a lack of organization, structure, training, and a clear vision of ultimately what was going to be best for those animals. What we saw was volunteers showing up at the airport and just joining in, trained or untrained. We saw a lot of different opinions of what help looked like. Some people showed up and they wanted the dogs to have their psychological needs met. Other people thought two walks a day and good clean food and cleaning the carrier was probably going to be enough. You know, we've learned that if something like this happens in Oregon, before anyone gets to work with the animals, they need to sit down and watch a videotape or get some kind of training and sign something to say we're all on the same page. This is how we're going to approach this. And if this doesn't work for you, you might want to look elsewhere because this is our real clear mission of what we're going to be doing with these animals at this time. And we learned that from Hurricane Katrina. Animals were not properly identified. They were shipped all over the United States, including Portland. And shipping animals 3,000 miles away makes it really difficult for any kind of owner reclamation. There weren't good databases. Good photographs weren't taken. We pretty much made it as difficult as possible for the population of the Gulf Coast to reclaim their animals. As an aside, I was downstairs in the cafe with Randy Covey from the Humane Society of the United States, with whom I've had the pleasure of working at the Oregon Humane Society for the last 9 years before HSUS pretty much stole him away from us. And I mentioned to him something that obviously he had been thinking a great deal about, and that is providing some sort of barcoding identification. So once we get an animal in, we have a database, we have a barcode, just like UPS. You just shoot the barcode, and you can tell where that animal is and its status at any given moment. That's really a very simple thing, and Randy says that they're really close to bringing that to completion. Something like that in the Gulf Coast would have been amazing.
Madam Chair. Yes, Charlie Brett is not wearing a helmet, and he's not
in
a
barcode.
This is not Dark Angel.
Okay. You don't want to be tracked.
He's a border collie. Yeah, Donna knows this.
No tracking of Charlie.
Something else that happened in Oregon, and I'm sure it happened in other states, is that animals came to Oregon from the Gulf Coast with diseases such as heartworm and parasites that we were not familiar with. We were so lucky at the Oregon Humane Society to have the resources to treat these animals before they were released into new homes. However, there were organizations around the state that in the heat of the crisis brought animals back with them and did not have the resources to treat them for these deadly diseases. My point is that this is a tremendously complicated and emotional discussion. In no way, shape, or form would we ever endanger a human in our attempt to help the animals. But as Randy said, this can be done in a collaborative way. Some of our thoughts are to have equipment such as dog and cat carriers and protective equipment such as the catch poles for fractious animals in locations around the state of Oregon. So if something were to happen, the equipment would be within 2 or 3 hours away. We want to collaborate with other shelters and provide immediate shelter should there be a fire at a shelter such as the former Evergreen Doe. The Oregon Humane Society is totally prepared to go and respond and bring those animals back to our quite large and quite lovely shelter. Well, we have the tremendous ability to take care of a large number of animals. So we would like to think, as the Oregon Humane Society is the largest animal shelter in Oregon, that we can provide some of these services for some of the smaller municipalities and smaller shelters. If it's a greater area that's disrupted, then we very well may need help. Americans love their animals. When 9/11 happened in New York, there was a tremendous outpouring of aid. I heard that literally storage lockers were filled with doggy boots because someone mentioned that the rescue dogs needed boots to enable them to go into the coals. You know, nobody needs a storage shed full of doggy boots. But there was money, there were food, there was stockpiles of equipment. And I have no doubt that if something like that happened in Oregon, that we would have that sort of assistance. What to do with it, how to use it, and use it in the way that it's meant is something that we can plan ahead for, so we aren't completely blown away when a semi-truck shows up with way too much dog food that we have no place to store. Sometimes that can be a crisis in and of itself. Using what we have gleaned from disasters, we are in a good position to work with the human agencies as a group to come up with a thoughtful, flexible plan. The Oregon Humane Society urges you to support this bill and help us come up with a basis to initiate this complicated but very necessary project. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morsett.
That sounds very good. And I imagine that you're going to have a 10-year sustainable, renewable, 20-year sustainable, renewable plan that isn't something that's put together and forgotten. And I'm sure that as you go through this, you will have training of people in the community because you never know when that's going to happen. And when it happens, it's too late to start training people. They have to be trained beforehand. So part of your plan is going to be all-encompassing for all the time, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette. Well, of course.
Right.
Let
me just follow up, and then I won't say anything else. What we're going through right now, I think, is, you know, we've seen a couple of disasters. We've seen Katrina. We've seen what happened out in Sumatra and so on. And we know something's going to happen. It absolutely, totally, you know, certainly going to happen. And I'm concerned that built into the plans is not going to be a long-range training, storage of material that is renewable and so on. And I'm sure you're doing that. I mean, that, you know, to make
to be sure that there is always someone there. There could be 30 years, there could be 50 years before we have a catastrophe, and we're starting now. So we have to think ahead and lay the broad foundation to make sure that it continues. So I do applaud what you're doing, and I very much support the bill.
Thank you, Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Susan, for your testimony very much. And now, Jane.
Thank you. Chair Berger and co-chairs, committee members, thank you for letting me come up to speak. I am the executive director of the Humane Society of Redmond, and I also have been regional coordinator.
Give your name, if you'll give us your name.
Jamie Kansky, and regional coordinator of the pet evacuation team for Central Oregon. And I also spent a week or so in down in New Orleans helping to rescue animals. So I was able to see the second tragedy that happened there with people's companion animals and how very sad that that was. But we've also had the opportunity in Central Oregon for the past 6 years to have a model program of sorts that really fits in with this plan, so I'm very excited to come forward and support it. Our pet evacuation team does have a core team of members that have been trained with search and rescue and wildland fire training, because that is our main disaster concern in Central Oregon is wildfire. We do renewed training every year of those team members, and we also have a very critical link with the Red Cross, which is unique from what I've found in many areas, and I think we're very fortunate to have that great relationship with them. And basically how our program has worked in Central Oregon is if there's a pending evacuation due to a wildfire or other emergencies, the Red Cross will call our team and give us a heads up of that so that we can establish a staging area generally adjacent to the Red Cross shelter that they have designated. And this has been a wonderful collaboration for us, for the animals, for the residents that are being evacuated. Also, a kind of a new piece the last couple of years is they've allowed folks that possibly weren't at home during the evacuation who have animals that were left behind, which is a huge concern and a double worry to folks that are already facing the potential of losing their home to wildfire and all of their belongings. We're allowed to go back in with a sheriff's deputy escort to remove those pets so that people don't try to circumvent the perimeters and go back in to do something that's not safe for them and the emergency personnel. So we've worked out really a wonderful plan, and we're going into our sixth year with that. And just a couple of weeks ago, the emergency services coordinator for Deschutes County and myself were asked to participate in Red Cross's training so that we could be apprised of all the potential hazards we're looking at in this next fire season. And there's some, you know, that could be very huge. They're very concerned about the west side of Bend, the Saddleback area. And so, you know, depending on conditions, you know, how things dry out, the winds and various conditions that can happen, it could be very explosive. Their concerns are anywhere from 50 homes up to 125,000 people. So these are things that in Central Oregon we're already collaborating on, getting prepared for. So I think that's pretty exciting, and it's worked very well. So I would just like to say I very much support this.
That is exciting, Jamie. I did not know about that, and I'm glad you're here today and to make the presentation. Do we have questions for Jamie? Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm so proud of both of y'all. Wow. I mean, that's great to know that we've got this type of leadership in our state. Years ago, we went down to spray the bed fly in California, and the smartest thing we ever did was have the government carry the liability insurance, because we got 4 million claims. Every car that got a drop of you know, chemical, even though the governor had called an emergency and they'd already lost 40 million or billion, whichever one it was, of their crops. I'm just wondering, is there any way, or do any of these states have a blanket liability policy that's invoked in the case of an emergency? Because I can see all sorts of things happening with these animals.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Nelson. Not that I know of, but I'm certainly going to look into that.
All right, thank you. I've been asked to ask you if you have a website. Either one of you. All right.
We both do.
All right. And perhaps if you would give that website to our staff, then the committee members could share that. All right. Thank you very, very much for your testimony today. I'm going to call Glenn Kolb is up to bat, and Kevin Mannix is on deck.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Berger, Chair Boo, and other committee members. My name is Glenn Kolb. I'm Executive Director with the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, here on behalf of our organization to support this bill and encourage your support. We did participate in the preliminary discussions about this. While I have submitted some written testimony, there are a couple things I'd like to address here and just maybe give you a little bit more facts about the animal population in the state of Oregon. According to various studies, including our national association, and the American Veterinary Medical Association, there are approximately 1.3 million cats in households scattered throughout the state. Next in line is man's best friend, the canine, with roughly 750,000 dogs in Oregon households. And as a side note, Dog Fancy magazine recognized Portland as the most livable city for dogs in the country this past year. Based on our current state population of households with this mathematical formula developed, there are about 133,000 birds in Oregon, and there are also 66,000 horses. Another interesting side note is that Clackamas County is among the nation's fastest growing area for the number of horses in population. And we can't forget that livestock is also an important and vital aspect of our health heritage in the state of Oregon. In economic terms, we're looking with a value of $553 million for cattle and calves, which rank as the second number commodity in the state next to nurseries and gardens. So I think we understand and recognize we have an affinity for animals, but I think in some ways we also must admit that we haven't done the best in preparation for what happens to care for these animals in disasters. And that's why we're here. We're going to be part of this and working with these groups, the veterinary profession, tending care to these animals. And as somebody in one of the work groups had said, in a major disaster, at times, all heck is going to break loose. Things don't quite go as we would hope. But if we're not prepared, it surely is not going to go as we'd hope. And by preparation, we can mitigate some of the disaster. We encourage your support.
Any questions? Questions? No.
Thank you, Doctor. Is it?
Chairs, Representative Nelson, I'm not a veterinarian. I'm an executive director.
Okay. Director Kolb, thank you so much for all you do. Back to my issue earlier that I was curious of. When I know medical doctors, there's always this issue about when they stop alongside of the road to help somebody, their liability is that, and good thing we have a good lawyer here. But how are you covered if y'all taking care of 350,000 pets? And
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, it's my understanding in Oregon law, there is a Good Samaritan law that offers actually veterinarians a waiver of liability to lend assistance to animals. What I don't know, and I can find out, is if that also would include disasters, but that was legislation that was adopted about four sessions ago.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll now welcome former legislator Kevin Mannix.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Joint Committee. I'm Kevin Mannix, and I'm an attorney from Salem. Yes, I'm an attorney from Salem. But I'm here today as Citizen Mannix, and I'm not here on behalf of any particular organization. I did have the privilege of serving in the House for five terms and serving in the Senate for a partial term, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this excellent bill today. I am here to point out a couple of things and to be available to assist if necessary. I would love to simply say, good bill, do pass, and leave. And when I chaired a committee, we'd often say to the witnesses, now, we like your bill. Why don't you just nicely be quiet and let us pass the bill out? If you have a work session today, you can do it. But if you don't have a work session today, I would probably have a couple of thoughts to offer about how we address a couple of, I think, are minor issues that get in the way of the big picture. The big picture here is empowerment, empowerment of our agencies and officials and our volunteers to do the right thing, to use common sense, to use their hearts when they're out there, to reach out to help people and their pets and their livestock in situations where a calamity has struck and our community is trying to respond, and we can never contemplate everything, but let's do the best we can with preparation. And the Office of Emergency Preparedness, Emergency Management, has done a fine job of working on this legislation and covering the nuances of a situation that need to be contemplated as best you can ahead of time. So this is a good bill. When you are carrying on this kind of project and listing the things that need to be planned for, I think they've contemplated as much as possible. There is one operative part to this bill, which is Section 4, and that's the part that I think Representative Nelson was particularly alluding to, because it is the key component about empowerment after you plan. What do you do in the emergency situation? And it says the person engaged in search and rescue operations may make every practicable attempt under the circumstances to rescue a companion animal, provided that the rescue attempt does not endanger human life. This is a great empowerment provision because it says you may act. What I would suggest is if there is a work session at another time, I'd be happy to work on a little bit of protective language for that person, such as, and in the old days we could actually mark up bills in committee and just send them out, but we don't do that anymore. This section does not create any new liability or expand any existing liability. That language might help. Or this section neither creates an obligation to act nor an obligation to refuse to act. And the reason I bring these points up is that when that directive is in the statute, unfortunately, after a disaster, somebody's going to come in with their attaché case and their suit, their dark suit, and they're going to say, oh, you should have acted in this case, and I'm going to sue you for not acting. Or you shouldn't have acted in this case, and I'm going to sue you for not acting. And I think it's important to limit that so that we don't have that consideration at work, and you simply look at the situation and say, what is the common sense thing to do? And again, if you're having a work session at another time, I volunteer to assist with that particular point. Otherwise, thank you for bringing up this bill, and thank you to the sponsors for bringing the bill to the body. It's important that this kind of planning be put into place. And to address an issue raised by Senator Morissette, it's important in emergency preparedness to deal with replenishment. And actually, our agencies and the Humane Society folks are all aware that we want to make sure that the supplies that are on hand are constantly replenished, and there is a process that can be carried out in the planning to make sure you don't have stale goods on hand when you need to do the emergency assistance. It's also important to understand that as part of the planning process, shelters can accommodate people with their pets if we do the planning in advance. Mm-hmm. But if we haven't done the planning in advance, you're stuck in a situation where you don't have the accommodations available. With all of that, I will mention finally what brought up my mentioning the liability issue besides Representative Nelson's questions is there is an old common law principle that once you begin a rescue operation, you're not obligated to start a rescue, but once you begin a rescue operation, you're obligated to continue it to its completion. And we want to be careful that we send in some buffers so we protect the people who are protecting other people and their animals. Thank you for the opportunity to appear today.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Lots of questions. Senator
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Kevin, obviously, this bill is a policy that everybody supports. But I was very interested in what you're saying about liability. And specifically, if you look at page 2, lines 3, 9, and 24, there seems to be a standard built into this that we're responsible as long as unless human life is endangered. And it seemed like that's a very, very high threshold human life is endangered. And I wonder if there's some language that we could put in there that basically sort of gives our emergency folks some wiggle room. And if you'd have any advice, it seems like to me that in those lines that where it says endangered human life or human life is not endangered, that that's a high threshold that our safety folks are going to have to comply with, and that seems to be where there could be some possible liability. Do you agree with me on that?
Madam Chair, Senator George, actually, with all due respect, I do agree with you about the concern about that language, but in terms of legal obligations, that's in a section that says that in developing the plan, the agency shall consider those factors, and it's not the operative language that I was talking about where you suddenly talk about, well, you may rescue that section I was reading before. This all goes back to page one, and I saw that at first when I read this bill, and I thought, ooh, there's a problem. And I, well, wait a minute. Oh, it says you consider these factors, and actually we do want to consider a plan that takes care of animals whenever possible, provided that human life is not endangered. I do think if you're having a work session at another time, that language might be softened a little bit, because you could argue theoretically that human life is always endangered to some degree if you're not totally focused just on the humans, and you know, because you're using resources to do other things. And so that language probably ought to be softened in terms of a directive for planning so that all possibilities can be considered.
Thank you.
All right. There was
yes,
it
yes,
Senator Marcet.
Yes, thank you. I say this with the greatest affection. You have not, Amendo Mannix has not lost his touch. No, I say that.
With affection.
With affection, because I was the benefit of his help one time in the House, and I was stuck with the bill, and he said, hey, don't worry, I'll put it in my bill, and he did, and it worked. So I appreciate it, and thank you very much for being here.
You made him blush.
I made him blush.
Pretty good move.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, could you go to the next person 1 minute? I've lost it.
I can't. Was there someone else on this end? Okay. Senator George?
I was willing to move this bill, but now that I look at this, and what an attorney tells me that he will help us to reduce litigation, I want to wait and give him all the time he needs.
All right. Welcome, Senator Johnson. We are just hearing the pet bill. We've just about completed, and so I'm going to thank you very much for your testimony, and I'm going to call Mary Bodkin.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairs and the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Bodkin, and I'm here today representing the American Federation of State Planning Municipal Employees. And yes, it's true, we did used to represent Debbie Boone's daughter as she worked in one of our shelters. We represent roughly 300 to 400 animal control officers employed by local governments around the state of Oregon. And we're here to offer our support for the concepts contained in Senate Bill 570. And I just have to say, I want to say a couple of things. Number one, there's few issues that raise the level of emotion that dogs, cats, pets, and small children raise in the level of debate or emotional outbursts in any kind of a legislative session or in any kind of public forum.
Madam Chair. Clearly, Ms. Bodkin has not been attending the Land Use Fairness Committee.
I'm sure there are furry critters involved in land use fairness somewhere. And, you know, my colleague Ralph Groner has to go to all those, and I'm not going to go. You know, we've heard a lot today about all the things that went wrong after Hurricane Katrina. We've heard about all the things ad nauseum, about all the things we did badly in responding to that terrible, terrible disaster. And I'm going to suggest that Oregon does it better, and that Oregon legislators don't need to look at Katrina as an example of how to do things badly. What they can do is look at Representative Boone's district in Tillamook County and see how to do things well. 1996, 200 dairy cows in Tillamook County were lost due to flooding. The tide came in and the water rose. And the water rose and the water rose. Now, I am the child of dairy farmers, and I know one thing really well. Dairy cows don't swim. And 200 of them drowned. Now, last year, we lost another 80. But you know what? We didn't lose 200. And losing any is too many. Because dairy cattle are very expensive. And, you know, one thing that I know as a small child is that one of the best honors a dairy cattleman can bestow upon you is to name one of his calves after you. And I had that honor as a small child to be named or have a calf named after me, who later became a champion, by the way. But here's what we learned. Tillamook County sat down with their disaster relief programming, with OEM, with all of the folks in the community, with their local elected leaders, and they developed a plan so that they didn't lose that kind of livestock again. And they built cow pads. That's higher ground. So that the cows had somewhere to go when the river and the water's rate went up. And they're getting better at it and better at it. And I spent about an hour and a half today on the phone with representatives from Representative Boone's district, finding out exactly who was responsible to do what in Tillamook County during that period. Here's what I found out. County sheriffs, it's the county sheriff's job. It's the Department of Agriculture's job. I now know more about removing animals in a disaster than I ever wanted to know. But I do know who's responsible, and at every level, it's an elected official. And that's a real important key point here. I don't have a problem with this bill. I think it's a great bill. I think we should have disaster relief plans. But I think that the county officials who are elected representatives of the citizens of those counties need to be the ones who are in charge. Now, whether it is Umatilla County, it's unlikely that they will have a flood. But I can tell you that our people responded to wildfires from Multnomah County all the way up through the gorge for the wildfires to evacuate the animals. You know, we've spent a lot of time talking about puppies and kittens. Nobody's talking about pit bulls who are pissy. Nobody's talking about Rottweilers who don't want you in their house.
Oh, wait a minute, Madam Chair. I did recognize.
Yes, you did.
You know, nobody's talking about the deer or the raccoons. You know, those are all the animals that we have to deal with as well. And it's not quite as easy to find a shelter that's willing to take 200 head of deer. It's not easy to find somebody who's willing to take, oh, I don't know, just as a for instance, 300 rabbits from a hoarder. Those are the problems that we have to deal with. And I think that there are so many animals who require care at a time of any kind of a natural disaster, whether it's fire, floods, or in some cases in eastern Oregon we had a horrendous, some of you will remember when we had the horrendous problem with the wild horse herds and the lack of food, where we had to fly in food for the herd so that they wouldn't starve to death in the winter because of severe ice and snowstorms. You know, those are the issues that we need to deal with. We were not invited to participate in the work group. We would have been glad to do so had we been invited. But there are a whole host of issues that arise around this, not the least of which is ownership. And if you think ownership is not a problem, try taking somebody's horse away from them. You know, try to take somebody's, you know, show dog away from them. I think ownership is not an issue. And those are the issues that I think we have to deal with. And one thing that we do know from past experience is that you cannot contract out government's liability. You, as a governing body, will always have the ultimate liability for the actions of anyone acting on your behalf, whether it's through disaster relief or anything else. And I think there are ways that you get through that. And I'm not trying to throw, you know, unnecessary hurdles for the bill by any means, because we do support this. We represent the people who work at OEM. We represent the people who work in the counties. We think this makes a lot of sense, and we think we should have good disaster planning. We think we ought to take care of the people first, but I think we all, you know, people care about their animals more than almost anything else. They, you know, they will abuse their children and love their dog. You know, we need to recognize that this is, that there's little that rises to the emotional level of caring that animals do. And, you know, they're pretty forgiving. So, you know, we need to figure out how we're going to deal with the liability issues, because there will be suits. If we go in and take somebody's horses off their private property and we access their private property, I can tell you that our people have been shot at doing that. You know, our people have had their lives threatened. Talk to the folks who work at OHSU in animal testing labs. They have their homes regularly vandalized. We took their names off of public records so that they could work at the animal testing labs with some anonymity. I said that wrong.
Anonymity.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Nelson.
I don't know, I have to thank Representative Schaffler.
And, but what happened was that some of the animal activists followed them home from work. And so now they're being harassed in their homes. And this is, you know, there is no end of emotional sort of hysteria around animals. And so we really need to think very clearly about how, what we're trying to accomplish, to look to the counties who've done a good job. And I gave you the disaster relief programs that Tillamook County has in place. There are other counties that have disaster relief plans for their animals that are just as good as these. Talk to anybody who has prize-winning animals, and they will have a plan for their animals under normal circumstances, and even under some abnormal circumstances. I'm pretty sure that the Tillamook Cheese folks have a better plan for the dairy cows now than they did. You know,
all right. Well, thank you very much, Mary. Are there any questions?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Senator Johnson's District 2.
Senator George.
Mary, you know, whenever I'm kidding, there's a seriousness about it at the same time. 66,000 horses means there's 120,000 horse trailers. Okay. Now, any of us who have ever been around a horse trailer or a cattle trailer realize that you can put any animal in most of those trailers and they can't get out. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect place to not only move livestock and animals, but a perfect place to house them temporarily. And Kevin, this probably goes back to you too. I think there maybe should be something in there that literally would indicate that if you supplied, allowed your equipment to be used in the preservation and rescue of these animals, that you would be held harmless. I know that our Good Samaritan law does that, but specifically, I would think anything that would activate that number of units that could, in fact, be animal habitat would be very valuable.
I'm sure that's accurate, and I think that there are no end of bright, intelligent people working with animals every day that don't. I mean, that these issues can be resolved. I'm just suggesting that they're not resolved in the bill. And to sort of say, we're not responsible, or we are responsible, doesn't legally get us over that hurdle.
All right. Thank you very much. Oh, Senator
One other
Johnson.
Question before Ms. Botkin goes, and I apologize. I was at another meeting, and you may have covered this, and tell me that you have if you have. In looking at the bill, there were mandatory holding periods for companion pets, but you had touched on the issue of animals that maybe were not going to be as cooperative. And I recall being in the Portland, in the Humane Society buildings in Portland, when they had taken in a huge number of exotic birds from a hoarder. And these were the most magnificent birds I had ever seen. But they were talking about the stress that put on the agency fiscally. And I'm thinking about the number of county shelters that are the financial responsibility of the county and what kind of a burden a bill like this might put on those agencies in terms of caring for not your usual run-of-the-mill animals, exotics that required certain atmospheric conditions or certain very specialized food. And I just didn't know from a county perspective, given that it's your members that work in those facilities, if you had any idea about the fiscal ramifications to individual county shelters from a bill like this.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, as you know, our county facilities do not have the flexibility nor the ability to really go out and do the kind of massive fundraising that the Humane Society does. We're sort of limited by virtue of our ability to draw off the general fund in counties, and that places undue hardship on our members. I think that it is that they partner regularly with the Humane Society when it makes sense. It has been I am not sure about all of the limitations they have, and I'd be happy to check on that. I know that our people feel like they sort of get stuck with the pit bulls on meth and the puppies go to the Humane Society. Now, that may just be the give and take of one agency over another, and I'm not going to buy into that, but I do know from being out at the county facility that they don't have lovable dogs, generally speaking. They have the worst of, I mean, it's like any other government agency. They get the worst of the worst.
Well, and Madam Chair, I think it would be rare that you would have an instance that in an emergency you were picking up a lot of exotic snakes or a lot of exotic birds. That would be a very abnormal circumstance, but I think that we'd at least, I would appreciate hearing from the counties where their facilities are funded by general fund about what their unanticipated financial burden might be in being required to keep animals for a certain period of time.
I know that when the horses, I think, weren't they in your district?
Lots
the starving horses?
Yes.
And mine.
Yeah. And yours.
And
yeah,
they just sank the facility.
They just almost pushed the facility under financially. And the law enforcement agencies as well, because it's all the same budget generally. They operate under the authority of the county sheriff, who's an elected official in their own right. And so, you know, that's the challenge that we face. And again, I don't want anybody to think that I'm trying to get in the way of good disaster planning for animals. My members care as much as anybody. I mean, you know, everybody went to New Orleans. You know, I mean, I have Water Bureau people who went to New Orleans. Everybody went to New Orleans to help because everybody needed to go there to help. And, you know, when Mount St. Helens blew, they all came to Oregon to help us. You know, that's what happens in this country is we help each other.
Okay, and that's the way life works.
Yeah.
Good.
All right.
That's good.
Representative Boone.
Well, I just wanted to say something about that hoarder thing, and that's not for this bill, but it's a huge deal. And what the big deal about it can be is when you have a hoarder case, the shelter is required to hold them until the case is heard in the courts, and that can be sometimes up to a year. Mm-hmm. And that's a big strain. So that's all I wanted to say.
And 200 rabbits become 300 rabbits, and then 600 rabbits, and then 800 rabbits. And,
there's that.
You know, and somebody downstairs, one of the other lobbyists, says, you know, I said, I don't even know what you call them. I was trying to figure out how to refer to woodland creatures, and he looked at me and he goes, I said, what do I call them? He goes, lunch. And I went,
stop talking to Ben.
I don't know anybody that wants all the rabbits, though. And they are, at this point, evidence. So.
All right.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 570. And I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 570. And I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 570 to the House floor with the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Boone moves Senate Bill 570 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair,
Representative, no. Thank you. I'm going to vote yes so we can move this bill forward, but I really want to resolve the liability issue, and so who would, I don't know how that would happen.
Well, you know, Representative Nelson, I tend to agree with Mrs. Botkin, who just talked about trying to get liability into a bill, and you probably would still be liable, but we can certainly talk about that. All right, Senator George.
Madam Chair, I obviously support the bill and look at the collaborative approach. I did some of the language that I saw in there that I discussed with Mr. Mannix, dealing in lines 3, 9, 14, 24, are just language that sort of, I want this to be more of a collaborative approach and less of a mandatory approach. I'm not sure I like the thresholds that are being established in our recommendation to the department. And if there was a way for us to maybe work on a little bit on tweaking a little bit of language in there, I'd feel more comfortable with it. If you would like us to move the bill, and I understand it, I'm not gonna stand in the way, but I would prefer that we amend and soften some of that language in there to make sure that we make this a collaborative approach and not so much of a mandatory approach.
Do I have other comments? Other comments? Other discussion? Representative Palin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll support moving the bill with a focus on the planning piece of it, but I think that we need to be very cognizant of the fact that at this point there isn't any mandated requirements in it, and I think that that's important to talk about, that we need to put this issue into our overall planning process. And I appreciate the piece of the bill that encourages owners to make their plans. I think that that's a real piece of public education that's important to get out there. So,
Senator George, would you be comfortable with including that in the planning part of it?
I actually think with some really slight amendments, I think we could be pretty comfortable with this. And I'd tackle it right away if you wanted me to. With staff, I'd be more than willing to discuss it, kind of like what we did on some of the other bills, and just throw in some quick amendments that I think, and I'll even check with some of the interest groups to make sure they're fine with it, and I'll do the work just to make it so I'm a little more comfortable with it. But again, I'm not so concerned, basically because what Representative Cowan discussed, I'm not that concerned that it's going to block my vote. I just would like us to make sure that there were some concerns out there that I felt like on some liability issues and some standard issues that I'm more comfortable with if we just tone the language down a little bit to make sure this is a collaborative.
So you'd like us to stand at ease while you go do that and bring the amendment back?
I will go work on it right this second if that's what you want.
Committee stands at ease.
Madam Chair, would it be possible to...
turn to the dais, please. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 570, and I would like to suspend the rules in order to allow Representative Nelson, Senator Marcet, and Senator Johnson to vote on House Bill 2080. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Marcet?
Aye.
Representative
Nelson? Aye.
Thank you for the courtesy, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, we will be convening in Lincoln City at noon on Friday. And we will have your agenda. You'll have your agenda. And then at 3 o'clock, we will be helping open the culinary department that is
so
new at Lincoln City, which is very exciting. We're going to help cut the ribbon. I think it's going to be a very, very good meeting. I look forward to all of you being on the road trip.
Yes.
And with that, I will call the meeting adjourned.
No meeting on Thursday, then.
No meeting on Thursday.
Okay, great.